There, depending on when you're listening to this episode, the dates and timelines mentioned may no longer apply. If you're enjoying the episodes thus far on the On-Chain Medley podcast, there are a few ways you can support. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can share it with your friends, families, and communities you're a part of. Your support really does go a long way, so thank you so much for that. All right, on to this episode.
I got on stage and I was like, hey, so, you know, I'm an IP attorney. I'm just curious to know, do you have all your paperwork for the artist? Because you can't just simply just sell someone's picture without their permission. And I cannot tell you the vitriol that I immediately got back from the group saying, hey, only good vibes here. You know, let's not rain anyone's parade, blah, 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 blah. But I'm trying to say I'm not trying to rain anything. I'm not like, oh, I actually want to help. I'm coming on here and I actually genuinely want to help you to make sure that you're protecting what you just made, because people forget, or sometimes I feel like artists forget that just because the medium has changed, the law doesn't apply.
That was Christina Liebert. Christina is the founder and CEO of Viager, a travel company that aims to take the stress out of planning trips. With its AI-driven digital concierge service, Viager not only provides travelers with safety information on their travels, but also saves travelers valuable time on destination research and planning, bringing them closer to hidden gems, events, and many other great activities while they travel. Christina is also an IP rights attorney. She has worked in different legal and executive capacities for various companies like Sony Music Entertainment and Coombs Enterprises. In this episode, we discuss IP rights and what many creators overlook as they aim to capitalize on the offerings of Web3 and blockchain technology. Christina also shares her insights on what needs to change legally to ensure that artists and collectors are protected. I'm not an artist in the traditional sense, but I found Christina's insights quite valuable. I'm sure you will too. Without further ado, here's Christina. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the On-Chain Medley podcast. How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty fantastic. I am snuggled underneath a blanket right now, sipping nice. On some tea, trying to just stay toasty.
I love it. Sounds so comforting. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Let's just start off with your background and what you've been up to and how you found your way into Web3 and what that journey has been like for you.
My background, first and foremost, is I'm actually an IP attorney. So I've been an attorney for the last 10 going on 11 years. And my life essentially been copyrights and trademarks. So I've always had a pulse on what is new and upcoming in technology. I have many clients that I've had in the past. Mostly of them have been on the creative side. So I used to work for Sony Music. I used to work for Bad Boy. I worked with different artists, and then that moved into startups to the point where I decided that I want to be a startup founder as well. So I started my own travel tech startup called Viager, which is a mobile application that helps you plan your trips and keep you safe using AI technology and also soon to be blockchain as well. My foray into Web3, it was gradual. I think from an IP perspective, you know, you're really interested in what the new technology is, because normally the law doesn't really catch up. So it's interesting to see what new innovative things are happening. And so my first real taste of it was crypto. I had a couple of friends who I call the crypto bros. The crypto bros were very much into it and they were trying to tell me about it. And I honestly, it was probably years ago that if I really think about it, the first time I was really truly introduced to it, which was Bitcoin. And I regret now not getting into it then at the time, because I would have been probably a billionaire. But yeah, so I think my full down the rabbit hole moment was about a year ago. And I started to just look around and see other things that people were doing within the space, since a lot of it started to promulgate, I think, much more within particular circles. This past 6 months, it just blew up for me. I was going to NFT marketplaces. I bought my first NFT this past summer. And then I started thinking about how could this technology be used in what I'm doing? And that's how we begin to really dive into the technology that we're doing with AI and seeing how we can lead this into a decentralized identity form on our platform. But overall, it's been a really interesting ride. My goal now is to onboard as many different people as possible, particularly for creators as well. Some of my clients are travel influencers. And so it is my goal over the next year or so to onboard at least 100 different travel influencers onto Web3 and allow them to begin to explore about how they can now use this new sense of internet. Whereas I call Web2 the sharing internet, whereas the Web3 is the ownership internet, and empowering them to understand the value that they have rather than sharing it on user-generated platforms like IG and Facebook. So that is me in a nutshell.
Thank you for sharing. That's definitely a very interesting background. And so since you've been doing the deep dive now for the last year, granted you knew about it years beforehand, what was it about the technology that made you see something in it for you to now apply it to your own startup? Like, what's the opportunity you see there? What does it unlock that was previously not possible with the Web2 world? Just say more about that for us.
Yeah, sure. So one key aspect that we're looking at for our platform is the AI portion of it and actually melding it together with blockchain. So I think if you really think about AI in that idea of the modules being taught to understand what a person wants and needs and that anticipation of it, like that is the big overlying idea that any particular AI engineer is trying to get to, that point of anticipation and knowing what someone wants to do. And of course, there have been various versions of that through recommendation algorithms, definitely trying to keep a pulse in of how to keep people engaged in platforms like Google, like Facebook. But the idea that we were grappling with, and I think a lot of people now, as they begin to understand what AI does, is that it needs a lot of data. And we, as people, have been treated as a data mine. All of our information is being taken without any compensation to us about how it's going to be used. There are these huge owners, essentially, with we have no say in what that information is done. Now we're seeing even more, and more things are coming out through whistleblowers and things of that nature about how much invasive these tactics are being used to get information from us to ensure that we don't really move anywhere. And just so from a privacy perspective, like, it really rang true to me, because I think I started to become desensitized very early on. So I was actually one of the very first users of Facebook. I'm originally from Boston. So the Boston schools were the very first to really get integrated into Facebook. So I became desensitized into sharing pretty much everything that I was doing, including even some valuable content. And we've become conditioned to just simply press accept once we sign on to a Web2 platform and then sign off all of our rights to whatever that we create. Again, from a privacy perspective, it really started to irk me the more that I really thought about it. It was almost like a deconditioning had to happen about being careful about where I put my information. Even though it may be free, it's not free. There's nothing in this world that's free. There's always a cost. And as I began working with more influencers and creators, I began to really pick up on the fact that so many talented creators are out there pushing content to these platforms with no compensation whatsoever. I mean, other than the fact that they get some sort of clout, depending on whether an algorithm gives them that clout. And then it then becomes of, what else do I need to do to get people's attention? And there's no true way of users getting really direct contact with the people who are consuming their content without Facebook or Instagram or whatever being in the middle of that. And so the woes and the cries of these particular creators, particularly for Black and Brown creators, is just a very soft spot in my heart, because I know the hard work that they do. And I already see it from a travel perspective about the deals that they don't get versus their white counterparts. So I think at that point, once I really put those things together about the sense of loss that they have from creating, the not getting the value for their content, the free information that these platforms are getting and making billions of dollars every single day, it clicked for me how much more powerful Web3 could really be. And as we continue to build it out and we put together and I think and really integrate the ethos of we're all going to make it and that people should have ownership of what they create, I became hooked. And I said, for us at Voyager, we want to empower our travelers to understand that one, the way that our models are going to work is simply if you plug it in, we will work for you. But once you plug out, that's it. There's no mining of information beyond that. And even before, when I really was creating the business model for Voyager, I already knew prior to knowing anything about Web3 that I was never going to sell our information. There was never going to be any ads on our platform. I made that pledge from the very beginning. And even though I had many advisors saying, well, are you sure? I'm like, no, like that is the antithesis of what I'm creating this for. I'm creating this for people to feel comfortable and to know that their information is safe. So now with blockchain, now we're looking at a decentralized identity portal where once you connect your wallet, your information stays within your wallet. And then once you plug out, that's it. And so we really want to make sure that as our users are putting in their particular likes and dislikes, what they like to do, where they're going, they can feel safe knowing that their information is not going to get out anywhere else and that the blockchain in and of itself provides that additional level of security. And so additionally from that as well too is the way that we see travel in and of itself is that sometimes it can be a barrier for people when we're talking about currency. And so what we're doing is we want to ensure that DeFi is definitely incorporated into our application to provide people the opportunity if they have done fairly well for themselves to use crypto or to invest into our tokens called VVIP, which then provides them with the exact same level of value that they would get from using any kind of fiat. So it's supposed to be a really community-based token where not only do you have access to our services, but you also have access to other travel-related products and services out there. So it's really going to be more of like a loyalty program. And the more that you are able to use it, the more that you actually get back in return to you. So that way it will be a way to ease anyone's wishes to travel in the future. So we really want this to be the way that it really eases anyone's kind of woes about working with people, making sure that you feel comfortable with people, making sure that you have a community that you can connect with and trust.
Okay, gotcha. I see. I just had a few questions that came up as you were speaking. The first one was when you mentioned ads. I'm used to a lot of travel companies serving ads, and I just think of it as the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. And then when you started talking about tokens, I was curious. I was like, what's their business model? If you're not serving ads, then what's that business model like for you? And does the token component that you're adding to help with that? Or how should I understand how it all works together?
That's a great question. So let me actually kind of explain how the app works. So when you sign in and you create an account with the application, we essentially take in immediately what the kind of things you like to do, favorite locations. And so at that point, then we start making determinations about what kind of things you would like to do and start making recommendations from there. Then we provide you with a list of activities. And these activities are ranging. Right? Like we have we're launching next week, and so we have about over 13,000 activities that you can pick from across the globe. And so if you're, let's say, a music person, then we'll pick out the most interesting or what we will find most likely that you like, you know, particular festivals, performances, etc. And so now you're able to actually create a plan from that. And so we are connecting you with that vendor. And so you pay through us, we pay the vendor, and then we take care of everything else for you. And then and the next iteration of that will be an actual schedule as well too. So we will schedule everything for you. We'll create a whole entire plan for whatever length of time that you're looking at, and we optimize it for you. So we'll look at your day and we'll say, okay, you don't want too many things throughout the day. So we'll put four things for you. We'll plan out lunch. We'll plan out possibly dinner for you. And we'll make sure that you're going to the best activities at the best time. So we're not going to send you to, let's say, like, if you're going to Paris, we're not going to send you to the Louvre Museum on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. because it's just going to be packed. More than likely, we'll look at your schedule and say, well, the best time for you to go, since you do have a interest in going to museums, is we'll send you to the Louvre on a Tuesday morning at 11. And so that way you'll have the time to actually appreciate what you have in front of you, but still making sure that we can fit everything as much as we possibly can in your trip. So we charge you for those activities that we book for you. And then if you want the additional services of the actual schedule, then that's an additional charge. And so the token in of itself is our way really to fundraise and also to cover some of the social good projects that we want to do. Like I said, creators and those within business have suffered quite a bit during the pandemic. And so the token is also going to be access to a DAO that we're creating. And the social good projects will be to help out Black and Brown travel influencers and Black and Brown travel business owners to get access into it, into the system, and to have others frequent their business to ensure that we have an equality portion of what we're doing. And so that really is part of the things that we fundraise for, will feed into that DAO and to be able to help out.
That's neat. Thank you for sharing that. Definitely agree with all the things you mentioned, especially diversity and really showcasing Black and Brown and other underrepresented businesses. Question then on what you mentioned earlier about, you know, keeping your identity and using a decentralized identity. Is the expectation then that as a traveler or a consumer here, all my information is going to be only accessible when I have like a wallet connected? Or is that identity piece mainly for like the travel influencers? I'm just trying to understand, does everybody who uses your platform need to sort of have a wallet, or is that sort of segmented based on the group of people?
You know what? One key thing that we're noticing as we're starting to speak to people in travel is that the idea of blockchain is still very new, right? So there are a lot of people that we have to onboard and educate about what we're doing. So initially, it's really going to be bifurcated. You'll have the option of using the regular, you know, Web 2.0, of using a username and password and things of that nature. And then, you know, your identity will be protected in that. The same way that we wouldn't share your information with anyone else, it still remains the same. Whereas if you want to go further in connecting a wallet, that information stays within your wallet. And so the only time you would access it is when you plug in. So it's going to be for everyone. It's really going to be for everyone. The influencers aspect of that is really outside of the application.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense. Thank you for sharing. That's awesome. No, that's exciting, all the things you're doing. Can't wait to see how things unfold over time. And hopefully, you know, we get out of COVID soon. That way, you know, people can experience travel again, because I definitely miss it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been there. Usually I like to leave the States at least like once a year, at least at minimum. And so I'm itching just to take a break from the US in general.
Switching gears now. So since you've been an IP rights attorney, or you are an IP rights attorney, you know, a lot of creators are swarming into this space. Everyone's talking about ownership and everyone's excited about all that. Just any sort of things you've seen so far? I know everything's still new, but as a new creator who's coming into this space, is there anything they should be aware of IP rights wise? Like, what is your own, what isn't? How should you think about that? And then eventually I want to talk about authorship versus ownership and any ideas you have there. But just to start, you know, as a creator coming to this space and everyone's talking about IP and that's exciting about Web3, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's an exciting time definitely for creators, because I think we're now seeing with the advent of NFT marketplaces, you're really starting to see artists and photographers having a place of, rather than just them sharing their information, they actually can benefit from selling a digital asset, right? So I'm trying to be very careful with my words, right? Because I feel like, you know, with all the talk of NFTs and then people being really There have been jokes about just selling a JPEG. Well, I mean, you know, there's a little bit more to that at the outskirts. Maybe that's what it seems like to you. And maybe that's how some creators also see it as well, too. But there has to be some better understanding of it, right? So the idea of the NFT is that you're selling a digital asset of your ownership, right? So when you talk about ownership with copyrights, there's a they call it the umbrella of rights. So there's rights to distribute, right to sell, to preview, to display, etc. Like there are a number of them. And so what you're selling is a particular portion of that. You're not selling everything, right? That is not. And I think people go into this thinking that they bought it and they can do whatever they want with the NFT. No, that's not true. What you're selling and what you've purchased is the display, the right of to display a particular piece of work. And so in a digital sense, and unless the author, who is the artist or the photographer, whomever, has provided you further rights than that. So they've said specifically, if you buy this NFT, then you have also bought the right to disseminate it, to do a derivative work of it, derivative work meaning that you can transform it into other things, then you don't have those rights. And so I think there is still a lot of education that needs to go into that for people who are first coming into NFTs about the digital asset that they just bought the rights to display. And it's great, right? Because as an IP attorney, I'm like, okay, let's get into a conversation about what you actually bought, because it's fun for me. But you know, there's still a lot of work to do with Web3. And as I'm speaking to travel influencers, anyone who's being onboarded, that part of that education should be there. You simply just can't say, oh, just go ahead and go do it. And you know, here's a wallet and here's how you get some cash. Go have fun. No, like there really should be a little bit more to that. That way people understand the legal aspects of what they're getting into.
Yeah. One of the things I've seen with a lot of NFT projects is, to your point, right, people think they own the rights to everything, but also documentation around the NFT and what you actually own is it's not there. And I don't know if it's because mm-hmm. these are artists and they don't really think about legal stuff, or they just don't know, or they're intentionally trying to not be clear. And I always wonder like why that is. Like, do you think they just need some legal guidance? Do you think every NFT or yeah. needs to have its own documentation?
Oh, they do.
Like, you have to read the terms and condition.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all the above. I'll tell you a specific story why. I was into a Twitter Spaces room a couple of weeks back, and it was about this particular artist who had minted an NFT collection. It was a limited amount, like 20 or so. And she was really excited because she had sold every single piece. And one key issue that I immediately saw was that there was this model that was in every single piece. And so as I'm listening in, and she vaguely mentioned that the artist, you know, was part of it, and you know, she's really lovely and things of that nature. And so I got on stage and I was like, hey, so you know, I'm an IP attorney. I'm just curious to know, do you have all your paperwork for the artist? Because you can't just simply just sell someone's picture without their permission. And I cannot tell you the vitriol that I immediately got back from the group.
What?
Saying, hey, only good vibes here. You know, let's not rain anyone's parade, blah, 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 blah. But I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to rain anything. I'm not like, I actually want to help. I'm coming on here and I actually genuinely want to help you to make sure that you're protecting what you just made, because people forget, or sometimes I feel like artists forget that just because the medium has changed, the law doesn't apply. And it still applies at the most basic element. If you take someone's picture, you have to pay them, or you have to get at least rights to say that you have the right to do this. And I really don't think she did, because I never really got a clear answer. And she just made a lot of scoffing noises about how could I ask this question. So there's still, I think, a lot of information that goes into, and of course, protection as well too, because now that particular model has a right to that money, because she never signed off on anything saying that you could use this in this particular way. So whatever thousands of dollars that photographer made, part of that money is going to be to that model. So there's still a lot. And I think a most basic sense as well too, that people are forgetting that just because it's an NFT, it law still applies here, and have your paperwork ready and have things clearly mapped out before you get into this arena. Because 9 times out of 10, if you were to bring a lawsuit, they would rely on the law books that they have right now. And that's the honest to goodness truth.
Yeah, I definitely sense that vibe too. It's always like a good vibes only. And I'm like, guys, these are questions we need to ask and answer. So everyone's protected and treated fairly here. Exactly. So it's very interesting how that's not the case. So then, to that point, then do you think the system and the legal system needs to sort of be clearer to accommodate this new technology or applications that we're seeing now? Or do you think that that's something that may not ever come, just given how slow things move at the system level here in this country, US specific?
Yeah, the law is always reactionary. It is never truly proactive. So what's going to happen is that there's going to be a, it's usually through lawsuits, right? That we see any kind of movement. And then based off of those lawsuits, there'd have to be a number of lawsuits throughout different states within the U.S. to say, okay, federal government, could you please do something? Because now we're having conflicting decisions from different states and we need an answer, right? So it might be years before we really truly see any clear clarification from the Copyright Act to what does that mean for ownership, taxes, et cetera, like all of that. It's going to be some time. And don't believe the hype of people saying, oh, you know, stuff regulations are going to come down. Yeah, stuff, some regulation might come in, but there's no way they're going to answer all the questions. It's going to be one particular point. And the people are like, well, what about the rest of it? It's okay, just... it's not going to happen. So I think for now, what projects need to be aware of as they are contemplating new solutions is to remember what the system is right now and remember what needs to be done. And so to your other point that you talked about, like proof of authorship, that is another major issue that is in the NFT space, because people are stealing things and they can quickly mint something before you realize it. And before you know it, thousands of dollars, maybe even millions of dollars is already lost to you because someone simply just copied and pasted it and then minted it. So there needs to be some sort of protocol that mirrors something of the Library of Congress. So the Library of Congress, just really quickly, it is that of a depository. It is a copy that any creator can provide to this government and entity to prove ownership, and that copy lives there within it. So if anyone wanted to ever check to see who the actual author was, then the Library of Congress would be the one place to look like. So we need a blockchain version of that. We need a third-party entity that can say or can be used as a means to verify authorship for projects. And so there has to be some sort of level of evidence that has to be, you know, submitted alongside with that. Simply just, you know, showing the JPEG as OpenSea doesn't let you do whatever you want, that it's not working. There've been too many projects that have been cheated out of, or for simply that matter, let's say this, and this is probably going to get me some dislikes, but simply taking a Bored Ape and then changing it into something a little slightly different doesn't mean that you're not cheating the Bored Apes. It just means that you have just done something a little different, which I'm sure Bored Apes never gave you the right to do so. Because like I said, it's underneath that umbrella of the right to create derivative works, right? I'm pretty sure they didn't allow you to create mutant apes or...
Did I not, though? I thought people said they did. Because apparently they're right. Their documentation is just, like, very open. So nobody knows.
If they did, that's great. But I'm sure there have been other CryptoPunks and other people have made different versions of CryptoPunks that didn't have the right to do that. Okay? So there needs to be a very clear way. And I hope so that a couple of other lawyer heads put their together and say, okay, we're going to create this entity to be maybe like the worldwide Library of Congress to validate authorship. And also provides also consumers a database of information that they know that they can trust, right? And so it's a major issue that, again, people, I think they're creating so fast and they're not thinking of the legal ramifications behind their creation.
I agree. Definitely sounds like a big business idea. So if anyone's listening, wants to tackle it, yeah, let me know. Listen.
If you have an idea, I would love to continue talking about it because there are a number of things that needs to translate into the metaverse.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, you heard. You know, if you're working on it, reach out to Christina. She can tell to you about it. Now, that's great. It sounds like going forward, any artist, you can't assume the system's going to eventually catch up to you. You have to do the work up front, get your paperwork intact, get all the rights that you need,
right.
Document that clearly so everyone knows what they're getting when they buy it and also what you expect when you sell it.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. That's fair. Awesome. Thank you. So then going back to Viager, your company, what's next for you all? I know you mentioned the tokens. What are the milestones are you working on? What should we expect?
Yeah, so the MVP, like I said, is going to be dropped within the next 2 weeks or so. So we're looking for beta users to come and we say, break the app, come find the bugs, come help us rearrange what we have currently right now. And then thereafter, we have a couple of things. So from the development perspective, we are finalizing the features that I mentioned. So the first feature that we're working on next is the COVID-19 risk factor. So we're actually computing for you a particular risk for you going to a particular activity. So let's say you just want to go explore and you're like, hey, what about this? We'll tell you based off of these factors, this is what your particular risk is for COVID for this particular area. So we're going to be rolling out that feature next. And then thereafter, we're looking at the schedule optimizer as well too. And then once we're ready to that, then we'll fully pull it onto the blockchain and then incorporate the wallet, do the KYC and things of that nature. So in between all of that, we're also doing our token launch. We have a number of different things that we are planning. We have airdrops coming in the next 3 weeks. If you want to get more information, definitely we have a white paper available, which we'll be unveiling tomorrow. So if you go to Viager.io, you'll be able to get access to our VVIP website along with our white paper. And then we'll be doing a number of airdrops throughout the course of the year. So definitely join our Discord as well too. We're having some fun on there. We like to also provide you with travel inspiration as well to kind of give you some ideas about where you would like to go in the future. That way, when you do feel comfortable, you will be able to move forward.
Nice. Exciting. So when's the official launch for the company then? When is it open to the public?
So the MVP actually will be open to the public immediately in the next 2 weeks. So anyone can jump in on it. You'll have over 13,000 activities throughout the course of the US, Europe, parts of Asia, and Africa available to you. I also think South America as well too. Yes, and Australia. So actually really worldwide, you'll be able to, you know, explore into it. And if you're already out there, you're already traveling, I hope this will definitely be an asset to you.
That's exciting. Thank you for sharing. Congrats again on all the success you are having. Definitely rooting for you and can't wait to see how things take shape over time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Any recommended resources for the audience, for people listening, just your favorite resources on learning more about blockchain, travel, anything you want to share?
So I actually created a Web3 Bible for my people who I was just beginning to onboard. I'm very big on do your own research, DYOR, but I did create a level of different questions, right? Like the burning questions you might have in trying to figure out Web3. So what I'll do is I'll definitely share that link with you. And so I have a bunch of my favorite Twitter threads, videos. I have a dictionary of the words that you probably will hear quite often if you don't know all the different Web3 lingo. Also a number of assets if you are a developer as well to how to begin to refine your skills to become a blockchain developer. So I'll definitely share that with you and if we can have access to it.
Yeah, awesome. Can't wait for everyone to see that. Thanks for sharing. And then just fun question for you. I know things are hopefully going to open up soon as far as travel, more globally, just any fun places you want to go visit when you do get the travel?
So I actually have a couple planned for this year. And depending on how COVID behaves, I might be able to leave the country. So Mexico,
Nice.
DR for a wedding, and then Poland by the end of the year.
Awesome. No, that's great. Do you like eat your own dog food? Do you actually use your Viajour service? Because you're an avid traveler, so maybe you just know where to go, or do you actually use it?
Well, funny enough, I created it because I needed help figuring out what I want to do because I just had so much FOMO.
That's awesome.
The app is helping me figure out. Instead of spending so much time going through too many blogs or, you know, web pages, this helps me figure out what is open, what I can do now.
Awesome. Solving your own problem. I love it.
That's right.
Yeah. And then how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way to connect with you?
So Twitter is my go-to. So my handle is KTLRISTINA. I'm on there. Pretty much I live on Twitter now.
Don't
that's
we
probably
all?
The best way to get in contact with me. My DMs are open.
Awesome. All right. I'll link all this to the show notes. Yeah, Christina, this is great. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights. And I'm sure everybody will be better for it because I've had you on the show today. So thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Laide. Until next time.